Hey everyone, this is Paul Siegel, and you're listening to Wandering DMs. Wandering DMs comes to you live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern, and you can catch us on twitch.tv/wanderingdms or youtube.com/wanderingdms/live. And now, on with the show. Hi, welcome to the Wandering DMs. I'm Paul.
And I'm Dan, and today on Wandering DMs, we're going to be talking about the role of the DM. What should you be doing? Why are you doing it? Who should you be doing it with?
So this topic came to us from one of our viewers. David sent me a link to another vlogger who was, espousing some software that he uses. But the topic that sort of came up was this mentality that perhaps the current expectation of D&D players is that the DM is there to serve the players, that they are an entertainer who is there to put on a show for the players. Is that more or less, am I getting that
right? Yeah, I think we there was more than one. I mean, when I was expressed a little bit of surprise, you dug up at least two other blogs that actually kind of used all the same terminology of the DM is a service industry employee and is the role is to provide the service of the best possible story to the players. And I thought that was a little surprise. I mean, once we scratch the surface, it's like we're realizing everybody has a different opinion on this, which is surprising.
Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot of different styles of play, so I guess it's not terribly crazy that different DMs maybe see themselves under different lights.
True.
And I think that current viewpoint, there's a lot of factors I think that could feed into that. For example, the rise of streaming. You have shows like Critical Role, where clearly, like, everyone who's playing that game is pretty aware that they're entertaining an audience, right? So they're, to some degree, they're all entertainers. Certainly, the DM who's preparing, Matt Mercer is preparing all his material, is certainly trying to entertain people.
Right.
And then also, like, professional DMs, right? That's a thing now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it kind of always has. I mean, I feel like it's all of a sudden people are talking about that again.
Mm-hmm.
You're totally right. Have you... On that point, just as we get into this, like, have you ever done DMing for pay?
No. I've run a lot of convention games, and that maybe gets close to the line because, you know, you're getting, I don't want to say compensation, but, like, maybe you're getting a free pass to the convention in exchange for running games.
Good point. And I've certainly never done DMing for a fee. I've done a smaller amount of convention games than you have. So generally for both you and me, we've been, you know, with a small circle of friends, not on camera, not being paid, and it's purely just a small social situation.
Right. Which presumably is most players, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you would think.
Yeah.
Maybe some may not.
Who knows? So anyway, that attitude of the DM being a servant to the players or there for their entertainment struck me certainly as very weird, struck David as weird, strikes you as weird.
Yeah.
So, and then another interesting way to attack this, as we've been discussing it, we keep coming back to the same question that I feel like I've been asked a lot of times by a lot of different people, which is, why do you DM?
Yeah, when I was thinking about this was the primary thing I was coming up with, was like, maybe I've never even thought about what a DM should be doing, but I can comment on, like, why I'm doing it.
Right.
And certainly that seems to, like, to be the initial hook into the question.
Yeah. I was actually just playing a game yesterday with some folks another DM who was running a game who also runs at a lot of conventions. We were talking about the conventions we go to. And he said, well, I like to run a lot of convention games because then I know the games will always be good.
Interesting.
Right. And I kind of agree with that, to be honest. Like, I like, when I attend conventions, I probably try to split my time maybe 50-50 because at least I know 50% of my games are going to be pretty darn fun.
Interesting. Why do you say that?
Why do I know they're going to be fun? I mean, because I'm running them, right? So I,
okay.
So I'm in control, right?
Okay. So granted, you're at a convention, mm-hmm. run a lot of games because then it's the kind of game that I like.
Right. Exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
It's
I
very
was
selfish.
Hearing that it's like I want to take my game to a convention because then it runs better.
No. Okay. Just mean to imply that, like, you know, I don't know. My feeling is when you go to a convention game, when you go to a convention and you sign up for a game, unless you, like, have prior experience with the DM and if you're just picking based on system or whatever, I think it's really kind of a 50-50 shot as to whether or not the game's going to be good, right? There's unfortunately a lot of... I don't want to say the DMs are bad. Maybe that's too editorial, but, like, maybe they don't play the style you like or... maybe they forget to show up. That's happened.
That has happened. That's happened to me. I agree. There's a large range in skills or preparation. And the one time I went to Gen Con many years ago, I was really surprised at the variation in preparation.
Yep.
It's totally true.
Yep. That's definitely when I go to local cons now. My strategy is always. I look at the DM names before I even care about what system they're running or what the game is they're running. Like, oh, I know that's a good DM. I'm going to play in his game.
Super smart. You know, it took me a long time, like as a comic book aficionado, it took me a long time to get off following characters and instead following creators.
Mm.
It's mm-hmm. an embarrassingly long time to realize that the quality was based on the writer and the artist and not the character. And that's universally true.
So... So Dan, why don't you just play? What is it about DMing that you love?
Okay. so as someone who's always been DM, so mm-hmm. so as someone who got the basic D&D box and knew nobody that knew about D&D, and as soon as I opened the box, I had to be DM forever.
Yeah.
You know how some people refer to Amazon as the everything store?
I've not heard that, but okay.
Okay, I think there's a book. I think someone wrote a book about Amazon calling it the everything store. So Amazon has everything.
Yep.
So D&D is the everything game, right? It has literally everything. As long as you like anything in the world, it's in D&D. And there's world building and fiction and mythology and there's character acting and there's performance and there's math and there's team building and there's strategy and tactics and mythology and history and architecture and funny voices and, you know, spending time with your social circle and overcoming challenges. And it's literally, I mean, for someone, I think, like us, that has a wide variety of interests,
mm-hmm.
right? It's just a really hard drug. It is a really hard drug. And once I tapped into that and realized that I could read and research and perform and present and think numbers and think probability and statistics, it's really incredibly addictive for someone like me.
Hmm.
And so for me, it's like every button, every trigger I have to be pressed is in this game. And it's just completely, when I started DMing, it's just mind blowing how everything I looked at and everything I read fed into this game and I could not get enough of it. And that hasn't stopped yet.
I just want to go back real quick here because you bring up an interesting point, right? That both of you and I probably started DMing really out of necessity, right?
Right.
There was no other. If you wanted to play the game, you were going to be DM. I was in the same position. Mm-hmm. I think that's not true for me today, and I think that's not true for a lot of people who end up asking me that question, and then perhaps they're assuming that. Pardon me a second. I got to plug in my computer here. Sorry, folks. Yeah, technical demands are coming in.
And this week, when I was thinking about this, I was like, you know, maybe there's. I don't want there to be a huge difference, but maybe there is a difference for people that started DMing really, really early in their experience. And then for me, the counter question is, why would anyone want to play this? and when I the rare occasions when I'm a player, I'm like, this game is terrifying, and I'm in mortal fear at all moments of really horrible things happen. Why on earth would anyone want to play this?
Well, of course, that's what makes it exciting, right? That's you know, the presence of mortal peril is, of course, What makes it fun? I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe we should turn that around, and if someone asks us, why do you want to DM turn, why in Arthur you want to play? I don't get that.
Yeah, yeah. So to get back to it, so why DM? So you're saying that the control, the being the person who has complete control over the world building aspect, or over the, I don't know, the content, the pacing, the scheduling, the logistics?
Interesting. I mean, interesting. I think for me, sometimes I look at it like being a scientist. Mm-hmm. Like for me, I'm wildly curious about what's going to happen.
Yep.
Right. And so running a game is a little bit like running an actual game session is a little bit like running an experiment of, I'm not sure whether these rules are going to work. I'm not sure how this world is going to run or this adventure is going to run. And so sometimes it's like I have a burning curiosity to find out what's going to happen. And that's probably the number one thing that actually brings me to the table of, I don't know how any of this is going to play out.
It's interesting. I feel like I've heard a lot of conversation recently about, is D&D a storytelling game? And I can't remember where I saw this written, but somebody was claiming that like, it's not a storytelling game. It's a story creating game.
Right? Nice. Nice.
Yeah. I kind of like that. Right. Like, so I think all of us, the players and the DMs, are all curious about what's going to happen, right? It's that emergent quality of the story of we know a story is going to occur, but we have no idea what it is. Just like reading a book, right? If I'm going to open a book, I know I'm going to experience a story, but I don't know what it is.
Right.
The weird thing is, of course, that in D&D, no one's written the story yet. We're going to collaboratively write it and read it at the same time. Here we go.
Right. Along with, you know, dice coming in as this universal veto or whatever.
Yep, for sure.
That it's also, incredibly immediate and actually beyond, there's something beyond any of the people to actually fully control it.
Yeah.
So it is fun. Like the moment you roll the die, there is something, there is no safety net right at that moment for which way it's going to go right then.
Yep. Yeah.
Little anecdote, right? So, and I put this on my Twitter this morning. So I'm running a game Friday night. The party runs into something horrible. They turn around and start fleeing, right? So the wizards, the two wizards, one of whom is first level, at the back are now at the front, right?
Okay.
They're running to get away. They turn into a tunnel they've never turned into. I got a giant slab of giant ton of granite falls on the two wizards. Right, mm-hmm. Wipes them up to zero hit points.
Yep.
Call for death saves as I do in my game, which is actually, I guess, the same as in 5th edition. Both of them roll natural 20s.
Huh.
Yeah. I've wiped out all the wizards in the party in one shot. Damn. Great. Wonderful. And they both come up natural 20s. And I'm like, I wouldn't have believed that, right? Yep. If you'd written that in a story, I would have said, no way, unbelievable, not well written. Just not well written. That's a 1 in 400 chance of happening. That totally happened at the table on Friday night, and it's the only way I could possibly believe that is to actually see the dice come up like that live.
Right. Well, I mean, there's certainly, I mean, witnessing the dice, right, is there's a certain excitement, gambling aspect to it, right? But also just, I don't know, there's those moments of high tension when it all comes down to a die roll and everyone on the table sort of, you know, hovers up out of their seat and looks over to see the number come up. That's very exciting.
That's the best. And, you know, there was someone on Twitter this week asking, like, do you roll behind a screen or not use a screen? And I'm constantly surprised at the number of people that are, like, ideologically biased towards rolling behind the screen.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, you can play any way you want, but boy, I highly recommend you at least try rolling in public, because the level of excitement, because both you and I have done both ways, right?
Yep.
And the level of excitement when you roll live in public with no safety net, it just doubles the amount of intensity that's happening right there.
It really does. It really does. I mean, that's, I remember doing it originally just through the thought process of thinking like, well, when am I gonna like roll the dice and cheat them and fudge them to be something other than what I rolled? And the answer is usually like, actually in favor of the PCs, which I think is surprising to some folks, but like usually in favor of the PCs because I'm a fan of the PCs. I'm excited to see what they're going to do. I hope that they win. And the fact is that takes the bite out of the challenge, right? That ruins the, I don't know, the danger, the fear.
Well, I have a really great player in my regular session, and we were actually walking to the game on Friday night, and everything you just said, he deduced about my DMing. And I've never said that.
Yep.
And, you know, honestly, it's kind of fun to play act the murderous DM,
yep.
You know? So I think when you read old Gygaxian stuff of, you know, if the player pisses you off, just hit him with a lightning bolt out of the blue, that kind of thing. I kind of doubt he actually ever did that.
Right.
But on the other hand, it's kind of fun to play act kind of teasing as if that's the case. And so my player Friday night, we were walking there and he was like, I think that you're actually a fan of the PCs. And I think that, you know, you have these rules that you're adjudicating very honestly and trying to be unbiased. And then if some corner case comes up, you come up with something reasonable. And if it happens to be a little bit more in the player's favor, you let it swing in that direction. And I think you're actually a fan of the PCs.
Yep.
And it went, you know, you're right. I'm not supposed to admit that, but you're totally right. Yeah.
I mean, I always try to pitch myself as a very impartial judge. I'm like, look, yeah. I have to play, you know, a little bit I have to root for your demise because I have to play the monsters because no one's going to root for your demise but them. And so I have to be true to them, right? Somebody's got to do that. But also, like, I'm rolling the dice in front of the screen because it must be fair. I must adhere to the rules. The primary objective is to be, you know, to be unbiased, right?
And so when I used to roll years and years ago behind a screen for everything, you know, and there are places in the first edition DM's guide that say, well, if something really ridiculous happens, fudge the roll.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do that once, and then you start to, there starts to be a slippery slope. So if there's a character that I like, I don't know, the dice come up, I say, oh no, they miss you. Mm-hmm. And then the next time I'm like, well, I did that for that character. I guess I should do it for this character. And then I'm like, am I doing this because I like one character or one player more than another? And I'm doing it all the time.
Yeah.
And then no one's dying. And then if there's any day where then I fail to fudge, I'm clearly by fiat just killing someone's player, just killing someone's character, I guess because I don't like them.
Yeah.
Right. And so I realized that when you go down that pipe, there's just no end to it.
Mm.
And then there's nothing but pure bias in fiat.
So let me go back to, so again, I agree. And I would reiterate that same advice to any DM who's not tried it, to at least try it, roll the dice in front of the screen. We think you'll be pleased with the result. But let me go back to the original statement of sort of like, what do you like about D&D? And I liked your analogy there of sort of being a scientist, performing an experiment. One of the analogies I used in my blog post was, if we imagine that we're all playing a video game, we're all playing the same game, we're all connected to the same server, but you guys are playing a different style than I am. Like, I'm playing this RTS, where I have this million-mile view, and I see the whole world, and I'm moving bits and pieces around and commanding whole troops, and you guys are, like, playing a first-person shooter, where you're, like, right down there in eye level and experiencing every sword swing and every last blow. But I am playing a game, right? That's my point. I am also playing a game. I'm also enjoying the outcome, being surprised. I feel like as much of a participant as the players. Let me say it that way. I want to shy away from saying I'm an equal participant, because obviously I have to do a bunch of prep work that you don't have to do. But I'm at least as much a participant, I would say, not less.
It's a really interesting viewpoint, and not exactly the same series of words I would have come up with. So I guess I never would have thought to defend whether I was a player or not. So it's a really fascinating perspective that you have, Paul, of I'm a player, but a different kind of player. That's great.
I mean, you know, that's, I think that, I guess I'm I'm intuiting that the question, the origin of that question of why do you DM, is this assumption that you don't get the same level of enjoyment out.
Great. I wasn't coming up with that interpretation.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. I guess maybe I should, next time someone asks me that question, I would maybe say, why do you ask that? Right? Like, what assumptions are you making? I'm very curious. And then they're going to be like, what's wrong with you? And I'm going to take out my notebook and start writing notes. Yeah, it's super weird.
But it's a great DM style response of like to make it more uncomfortable. Right? You ask me a question, and the answer is always, it becomes more uncomfortable the more you dig at it.
That's great. Oh, geez.
But that's a good point. Maybe that's why people are asking that, is maybe they don't think it looks fun. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I certainly know that DMing looks intimidating. I know plenty of players who have thought about DMing, and they're like, I don't know if I want to do that. It seems like a lot of work. Seems like, you know, a lot of pressure.
Do you think it gets more? Do you think it looks more like that over time? Because I don't remember it being hugely threatening when we got started.
I mean, I remember that back in college. I remember. Yeah. In fact, I even remember specifically playing in a campaign. I say campaign. We had exactly one session, and the DM just let it go, get into his head, and he became so paranoid that it wasn't going to be good. That it wasn't going to, you know, meet the expectations of the players. That he kind of the whole thing imploded.
Right. I mean, I had a new player Friday night, actually, who interestingly has played Pathfinder for about 6 months, and enjoyed it, and actually clearly had a lot of knowledge of D&D type stuff, which was great to bring to the table. But it never made up her own character to date. Had like the character creation Pathfinder was more complicated than she wanted to interface with.
Interesting.
So I think that even though she's played for at least half a year, she made her first character on her own with me Friday night as the game was starting.
She was playing before that? Where did she get her characters?
Her husband always made them up for her.
Oh, I gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So I mean, so that's on the player end, and maybe the same weight of rule. Obviously, Pathfinder has like a 600-page basic rule book, so maybe DMing looks more intimidating over time as the games
could
get
be.
More
Certainly,
complicated.
You know, I recently ran a game of 5th edition with a new player who was new to RPGs, never played any RPG at all. And he spent a lot of time of the early game, like, digging through all the options. Like, I don't want to screw up. I want to know all the rules. I want to understand how this works, right? I'm trying to understand the game. Yeah. And I had to really encourage him. I was like, I get it. I understand. But you're missing that magic moment of new playerism, where I would highly recommend you step away from the rules and just live in this imaginary world and tell me what you want to do. And we'll explain how the rules work for anything you want to do. But the magic of D&D, of course, is that promise that you can do anything.
Right. Totally. And I've seen the same thing. My roommate a number of years ago got into 3rd edition, and we were starting at a higher level. And my God, he spent an entire week going through options in the player's handbook and making spreadsheets and all that kind of thing. And boy, it hurt me to see that because it looked burdensome. I felt bad. Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, it is interesting to roll in with my, you know, with our very stripped down original style rules, which the player options just sit on a half sheet of paper, and that they can at least interface and get started somehow.
Right. You know, the funny thing is I now try to take that mentality with me to other games. Anytime I'm presented with a, hey, here's a new game you've never played before, a new system, I say, great, I don't want to read it at all.
Great.
Thank you. Can I just play? Can I just pretend to be this character and you tell me what to do? Thank you.
How do referees react to that? Does that go well all the time?
Actually, yeah, typically very positively, I would say. Okay. Typically very positively. Now, you're already talking about I'm playing some game that's got to be fairly esoteric because I'm a big dork who likes to read every game that comes across his desk. So, like, if you stumped me on a system, good for you. Yeah. And convinced me that it's good enough to actually play, even better. Great. And then I'm going to say, good, you just tell me when to roll the dice, and I'm just going to pretend over here.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great.
And my own habits don't let me hold that for long. Once I'm in session number two, I've probably read the book. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Totally. That makes sense. So maybe we should. Okay. So once it, see yeah. with us, we're like, why do people play? Like, how do people? I keep going back to like, well, the mystery for me is like, why anybody plays this or how they play this. Mm. So we should bring it back to like, why or how we're DMing. So one thought that occurred to me is that there's clearly a couple tasks that come under the DM byline which can be separated out. And so for starters, there's the world building aspect mm-hmm. or the adventure building aspect that clearly you're probably gonna do offline. And then there's the actual what's traditionally called the referee aspect, where you're trying to be fair and unbiased and balanced at adjudicating the rules at the table. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, the same person does both, but well, clearly those are tasks that you could separate out into two separate parts.
So once you talk about separating out the parts, of course, my mind immediately goes to the exercise we've done, which is, well, what if you have multiple DMs?
Yeah.
How do you, like, what does one DM do and what does the second DM do? And the role I think that you didn't say there that was our obvious choice was the adversary role, right? I'm going to control the bad guys. And we've done that with two DMs very successfully multiple times now, right? Where one of us gets to just play the bad guy, and that's actually super fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And makes it way more deadly. Having one of our brains solely dedicated to what's the most punishing thing that I can do with this series of monsters makes those monsters much more deadly, and the players had better be on their A game, and anytime we've done that, they have been, which is really great.
Yeah, I mean, well, one of the things I think you don't notice about the DM is that because they do have all of these responsibilities and juggling all these different things, is that they often just don't have the time to really think through one specific aspect. Like when I'm controlling the monsters, I'm usually very last minute thinking of their tactics.
Right.
I will call out a book that I think is on pre-order right now that's based on a blog called The Monsters Know What They're Doing. It's specifically based in 5th edition, if you're into that. Although I would say it does have some elements in it that are applicable to any edition, but he really does focus on the crunch of D&D 5th edition rules. But specifically just sort of says, here's this monster type, here are their tactics. Right? Here's just their general combat tactics, which is really nice because then I go, well, somebody thought about this stuff up front, and I can just implement his system and not have to worry about how do goblins fight differently from hobgoblins?
How would you, I mean, that sounds great. How would you expect to engage that? Like, is it something you read and they just remember? Is it stuff you should put in your adventure text? Yeah.
I think it's just something that you read and internalize.
Okay.
And sort of remember, great. Oh yeah, I remember he was saying, goblins, what was his point about goblins? Because I just used it recently, actually. So his point about goblins is that they like running fire. And that they're very cowardly. And the 5th edition tactics for them, actually, the mechanics in 5th edition really emphasize that because they have this bonus action to hide. So he says, well, obviously, anytime you're controlling goblins who don't have a superior around them who are cracking the whip and forcing them to do something, then their movement or their action sequence should always be shoot, move, hide. That makes sense.
Which is great and supported with the extra 5th edition rules to make that happen, which is nice.
I think you can apply some of that to old school as well and say, like, okay, goblins are cowardly. They prefer, running fire. They do often sometimes have, some larger creature that's commanding them to do something that they don't like.
Right.
And that's when they do kind of more swarmy tactics because, oh, God, maybe at least I'll survive if I'm surrounded by all 50 of my... cousins.
Yeah, makes sense. Very traditional. I mean, that's what's been in the rules since the first set is that's what they like for orcs. It totally says that in the first set is they need a strong leader or they're going to do much stupider things. Yeah. And so to come back to like when like it was very your point about we don't have as DM we don't have much time normally to think about tactics, and that's why you want a resource like that. When I was playing the adversary for you, it really highlighted the fact that if you've got, I don't know, 6 players at a table and it takes two or 3 minutes to get around the table with actions, you've got 6 processors on that side, thinking about the best possible move they can make against your monsters. As DM, you have to normally like adjudicate, explain, talk, handle all the way around, and then it comes to you, and it's you're kind of expected to have immediate decision for an action that you haven't thought about. Mm-hmm. And so you've got about 5 seconds of strategy time versus about 12 minutes of strategy time on the other side. And it's there's a huge advantage. Some people talk about the action economy, mm-hmm. but I might also talk about the processor economy is also fighting against your monsters. So having the having a resource like that, so that you've got some amount of pre-planning is great, or having an adversary to run the monsters really makes an enormous difference.
I would posit that's also something we both really like about old school, is that the rules are generally very light, to the point of, like, hopefully easy to memorize, such that...
Yeah. Totally my goal.
Right, yeah, yeah. So that you can reduce the amount of processor time, and right. especially the worst case of processor time, which is, I don't remember, open book, flip. That's
absolutely
that any, you know, 30 seconds of game time spent flipping through a book is 30 wasted seconds, I think.
Absolutely. And I'm always going to come back. I think the rules matter. I don't want to go no rules, but I think the rules matter, and therefore they should be shaved down to something you can remember.
Yeah. Great. Okay. So, I think I kind of pulled you off into a weird tangent there. You were talking about splitting up the different parts of DMing.
Yeah, well, once you start shaving it, you can find all kinds of little, you know, strands that you could possibly separate out to somebody else. So your thing with the adversary is great. I admittedly that wasn't the first thing that popped into my mind. Mm-hmm. My distinction was sort of world, you know, adventure building versus refereeing,
right?
Which is also away from table at table.
Would you say so? Let's look at those three things, right? And I'm going to chuck my third one in there at the end, right? Which is world building, refereeing, adversary. Are one of those more fun than the other? Are any of them not fun and you would rather not do it?
Well, I think that I'm best at refereeing. I'll say that. I think that I'm best at refereeing, and so there tends to be a level of satisfaction there, and I am still wrestling to get better at the adventure writing.
Interesting.
So that tends to be a bit of a struggle for me. And there are times when, you know, I'm happy to take somebody else's adventure, interpret it, and run it. Tends to go pretty well for me, actually. What about you?
I actually kind of feel the inverse. I think that I'm always have a little nagging voice in the back of my head that says, you know, you're forgetting something. Like when I'm doing the refereeing part, right? You forgot this, okay. Or you're doing it wrong, or... Okay. I better look this up later and try to memorize that specific aspect. Whereas I really enjoy the world building and the content creation. I certainly do it a little different, I think, than most folks think about it. And possibly this is another reason that some people think DMing is very intimidating, because they think, I have to create all this stuff all up front before even we sit down to play the first session. I have to have a whole world and all these right. NPCs and all these adventures to go on, and et cetera, et cetera. I personally, the way I tackle it is I want to create the smallest possible thing I can, just the bare minimum of what is required for the next session.
Yeah.
And then I want to take the inputs of what the players do and have that, and then say, okay, well, they did these things, so obviously I need to make X and Y on top of what I already have. And then also I have this analogy where I like to think of myself as rather than someone who's creating from whole cloth, as more of a quilter.
Yeah.
So... I do often create my own dungeons, but I also find cool stuff on the internet that other people have created, and I super enjoy trying to figure out how can I change this just a little bit or steal the best pieces to incorporate that into my game so that it feels cohesive, so that the whole thing feels like it was intentionally built as one giant thing when really it's not at all.
I love the quilter analogy. I mean, that is really a beautiful way to look at it. I mean, one thing I just got to say, and like as someone who plays with you as DMing, I would not have ever guessed that you feel like you're forgetting stuff in that, or that you're not, that there's any way that you're not doing it right, because you're completely 100%. To my end, it looks like you're 100% in control of what's happening and completely confident.
Well,
and Absolutely, 100% the best DM that I've ever actually played
well,
with.
Well, thank you. My little secret trick is to become incredibly authoritarian and say, well, whatever I say is the rule, so screw you guys.
See, and that's right. So you've reached peak DMing as soon as you say that.
I actually do this in my 5th edition games a lot because I really don't know the 5th edition rules. Like I really need to spend more time, and I'm constantly beating myself up for like, I haven't really read even the player's handbook cover to cover. You don't know half the classes. You probably ought to know that stuff. And what I tell my players is, I just fess up. I'm like, look, I don't know these rules super well. I'm going to screw some stuff up, and if I get it wrong, you can remind me after the game, and I'll try and get it right next time.
That's great. And I assume that your players work well with that?
Yeah, they love it. They're like, yep, that makes sense.
I mean, people say that they have players that will refuse to do that, but I haven't seen that for quite a while, so it's surprising when I hear that.
I think, honestly, as long as you say it up front, like, it sounds very reasonable. Yeah. You're like, yeah, I don't want to waste a bunch of time tearing through a book. The action is more important than getting it right.
I've seen a discussion online on a 5th edition forum where I said that, and that was the minority opinion. And the counter argument is, I'm playing 5th edition because I like these rules, and so do my players, and we want to get it right. And so we're going to commit to looking up the book every single time because those are the rules that we want to be using.
Maybe they just have a lot of time.
I mean,
I only have so many hours of the day that I can devote to playing D&D. I wish it was more, but it's not.
Wow, that was killer. I forgot my point. My point is that I have yet to get a session where I get everything right.
Yeah.
Right? Every single time I come away and I make notes, and I mean, this is the same for my teaching, actually. Every single time I come away and I've got 2 or 3 notes of like, I forgot this, or I need to remember this better, or I need to shave down that rule so it doesn't work like that. And I've never had a single session where I came away and was like, that everything was right there. There's always something that I'm trying to fine tune and improve on. Mm-hmm. Forever, apparently forever.
Yep. I guess even the oldest, earliest editions of the game are complex enough that you're just never going to get it all right.
Or there's contradictory stuff, or there's blank spots that you're having to interpret or make up. Or there's stuff that's just stupid and wrong.
I mean, admittedly, that's something we like about the old editions, right? Is that there are lots of blank spots, and we are encouraged to interpret and fill in the blanks.
That's true. And it's generally not brittle. It's generally not brittle.
Yeah.
Like with a complicated thing with 3rd edition, I don't know, if you change a skill point here, okay, then that feeds into like bonus skill points over there, and that changes when you can get this feat, and that changes this kind of balance operation. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be very brittle, and the older stuff is in a slightly unformed state that gives it flexibility. So we can make those alterations when we want to.
Interesting.
Yeah. So on the point about like separating adventure writing, it's interesting. So you actually prefer the world building and I prefer the refereeing. So like one thing is, now that we're, you know, there was a point where adventure publications weren't a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yep. And, Gygax, I guess, resisted that for a while and didn't think that would be necessary. And there is a certain camp of the earliest players that played with Arneson, I guess, who nowadays say that the idea of a published adventure module is an unforgivable heresy and corruption of the game.
I mean, certainly interesting historical fact, right? Like, the earliest published modules were not, in fact, published by TSR. They were by a third party.
Correct.
So
correct.
Yep.
Correct. And then on the other hand, even though it's the Arneson's friends nowadays that say that, the earliest TSR published dungeon was Arneson's Temple of the Frog in his Blackmore supplement for OD&D. That was actually the first TSR published adventure site. So as usual, there's all kinds of weirdo fundamentalist contradictions running around, but. So granted that, like, I grew up in the era where adventure modules were available, I would get one, I would read it, and I would just have a burning curiosity for what's going to happen here. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of, for me, it's kind of like, like a half-written story or movie whereby the only way that I'm going to find out what happens here is that I need to run a game.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to DM or else I'm not going to find out where this story goes.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, I would say something that's really struck me about the first time I sat down and listened to the Fear of a Black Dragon podcast,
right.
They were trying to define what old school was or what an old school module was, because that whole show was just module reviews.
Yep.
And they said a key component of an old school module is that there's no ending,
yep. Right?
That it's a beginning, maybe some middle, maybe not, but right. Really is it's just the setup, and right. Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen. You find out through play.
Right. It's definitely not a story that's being handed to you.
Mm-hmm.
And the oldest modules are just places.
Yep.
In some sense, right? They're bad places with monsters and treasure, and you know, there's not even an inception of a middle or end. There's just a place you can go. And when you go there in a Heisenbergian style, things will change.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So to a certain extent, when I come to the table as a DM, I sort of feel like I'm a scientist running an experiment, and I sort of feel like I'm a movie spectator. But the only way for me to see the movie is I have to crank the projector physically to get it to happen. and in fact, I have to run an entire world. I have to run an entire world, or I'm not going to ever find out what happens in this place. I feel like I'm a really curious fan spectator cranking this projector to find out what happens.
That's funny. It reminds me of the old Carl Sagan quote, right? Of, in order to make an apple pie, first you must create the universe. It's not
that
wrong.
He was give me some of what he's on. Yeah, that's what it feels like sometimes.
Yeah.
That's really what it feels like sometimes. Is here somewhere out there, there's a story, there's a game, and you have to really do a surprising amount of labor to get that, to find out what's going on.
Yeah,
yeah. So I would say, if someone wants to be DM for the first time, what would your advice be now to get started?
I would certainly start with a pre-written module for sure. This is a really good question. What is the best way to start DMing?
Maybe that's another topic. Maybe I've just created an overly large topic at the end here. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to think about that one. Let's put a pin in that and come back to that for another. Damn it, Dan! Now I really want to think about it, and I'm trying to force myself to stop thinking about it so I can move on. Like, that's okay.
This might be the first time that I've actually stumped Paul. See, Paul usually stumps me like once an episode, usually right at the start. But I've actually managed to stump Paul for the first time. So there's some comeuppance. That's good.
Great, good stuff. Okay.
I mean, my first stab at we should come back at that. My first stab is, you know, run something pre. Don't feel like you need to make a world.
Right. I agree with that.
If for some reason you have the burning desire to make a whole world, you know, like George Martin or somebody like that, here's your opportunity. Here's your system, which helps you do that.
Yep.
But do not feel like you need to make a whole world. I mean, I was reading stuff today of, you know, Arneson was, you know, he was making up stuff just a couple steps ahead of the players.
Yep.
Right. So you can make up one adventure and get started and see if you like it. And you do not feel like you need to make a whole world to get started.
I mean, admittedly, that's also like, that's an improv technique, right? That's, that's it. I was just recently playing a game of Fall of Magic. And one of the big precepts it tells you is think small, ask small questions, only come up with the start of an idea. Don't think about having to answer everything up front.
Yeah. Now, if you want to go in the other direction, the truth is I do. I actually do. I am more of a top-down guy, but I wouldn't recommend that to everybody.
No.
So you should probably get started, and DMing isn't as insane as it looks.
Yeah. There are certainly tools for that. I feel like I was talking to somebody recently about sort of games that set you up for running other games, such as How to Host a Dungeon is right. a sort of a little toy slash game thing that you can do that is a little like a life simulator for a mega dungeon. You start with a blank page, and by the end of it, you have a very complex ecosystem. And the end result is you look at what you've drawn and written, and you go, oh, I could write a whole mega dungeon out of this.
That's great. Now, you've actually applied that. I haven't actually run that, but...
I've played How to Host a Dungeon. I've yet to go through the actual exercise of taking the output of it and making a real adventure out of it. I think BJ did. I think BJ and I sat down at one point and ran the How to Host a Dungeon, and then he did that next step.
Gotcha. Interesting. Yeah, it sounds like that was a satisfying process to go through.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Okay, back to what do you like about why do we DM and what's the DM supposed to do? I like world building. Do I like refereeing? I wouldn't pick it out as like ooh, this is the guts. This is the fun.
Really?
Yeah.
That is surprising to me.
I mean, maybe we're defining refereeing slightly differently, but I'm talking about just sort of like the applying the rules to the stated intent. Like, I want to do X. Okay, what rules make that happen?
That's my favorite. That's my best part for me.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
I'm not saying
part.
It's unfun. I'm not saying it's
right.
But it's definitely a task that has to be done, and it's interesting.
That really surprises me. that really surprises me that we're slightly on other ends of that. I mean, it's probably like, I don't know, 45-55% difference or something.
Yeah,
but
probably.
That kind of surprises me.
Yeah. I would say, like, right, and I guess maybe it's really just sort of like, you know, a chicken and egg question, but I think we both agree that one of the most delightful things as a DM is having the players do something very unexpected, right? Like that moment. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that moment when the players are like, what? They're doing what? That's crazy. I never would have thought of that. Okay. I guess that works. And for me, the fun of that is not then thinking, okay, how mechanically do we apply rules and dice and whatnot? The fun for me is my brain immediately kicks into the next step of like, how is the outcome of this going to affect the world?
Yeah.
And how is the end result here going to change the story we're writing together?
Yeah, it's interesting. For me, that moment is kind of interesting of like you're handing me a math problem.
I can see that.
I have to, like, all of a sudden I have to do a really quick scan through all my knowledge of like physics, architecture, history, mechanics, biology, and quickly come up with some kind of probability for that particular thing. That's a really interesting instantaneous math problem challenge for me. And then the dice roll, and then on the other end of that dice, I'm like, oh no, what have I gotten myself in now? Yeah.
You know, and I had a reader on my blog who also responded that he viewed DMing as like playing a really challenging strategy game. That like when he plays a strategy video game, that eventually at some point he starts to see through the AI, because ultimately the AI can only do what it's been programmed to do.
Right.
Whereas with players, they always do crazy things. And so he's constantly having to like readjust his strategy of, I don't know what, how to kill them? I'm not sure what the end.
I think that's like a kind of an adversarial perspective, but I'm so glad you pointed that out to me before the show, actually, because again, a totally different, really fascinating, I think totally legitimate way of looking at it is like, at least for that particular slice of it, of like actually being in opposition to the players in a certain way, and then again, you've got this one part of your brain that's trying to be a neutral rules arbiter, and you have this other party. So there's the referee versus adversary distinction right there. But at least on the adversary part, that's a really legitimate way of you're playing a strategy game against six other brains at the table.
Yeah.
And that is, it's really, and it's incredible. It's really hard to beat them.
Yeah, it is.
In my experience, it's really hard to beat my players.
Yep.
Yeah. They make it really frustrating for me. I'm trying to get better.
So points I think we agree on, right? Like neither one of us thinks that we're like writing a script to then go and act in front of an audience, right? We don't view our players as an audience. Right. We don't view ourselves as performers.
Right.
We both like that we're sort of scientists performing an experiment or observing a simulation that we started and has a lot of variables that are out of our control.
So
there's some common threads there. I don't know if that's to say that somebody who does view it as, yes, I'm a storyteller and I'm going to create a thing for my players for them to watch is necessarily bad. It's not my taste. It's not what I would want to sit down and do. Certainly been frustrated to be in such a game where I'm, sitting there thinking, just write your book already. I'll read it later.
That's the exact same thing I was going to say is as a player in those games, I can feel that.
Yeah.
And I've seen a couple DMs that I actually have played with at conventions, like on Twitter, say, my players don't realize this, but I'm improvising everything on the fly completely and I don't have anything prepared and they never know that. And I'm like, I knew that. I knew exactly what was going on here. And you can tell when there's either nothing behind it or when there's a pre-written script that you're just being railroaded through. And I can feel that, and it's not as exciting as a situation that the dice are determining. So I agree. It's not the kind of thing I would want to play. If there are those kinds of story situations and everybody's having a good time with it, you can't condemn that.
Yep.
But to me, there is something slightly more exciting about the way we do it.
I agree. All right. Shall we wrap up?
I think that's good. So that at least scratches the surface of why Paul and I DM. And the little secret is the players are giving me a service. And we're at least performing and we're at least playing something as much as the players are.
Yeah, I would never want to say there's zero performance. I mean, everyone at the table to some degree is performing to the rest of the table. Right. That is definitely a piece of the pie. But I would say it's not the primary role of the DM. In fact, I would say that part of it is equally distributed around the table.
Yeah, yeah. I will say that, I mean, again, as the DM, you get to, as far as character performance goes, you get to play a whole lot of different characters and voices in a session. True.
Although I would say I've super enjoyed games where the players get into some situation where they really have to get in depth playing their characters across from each other and have these in-depth conversations where I get to completely sit back and be the observer. And now I'm just watching the show, and that's super fun too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. When that mix can catalyze that kind of thing. That's really magical too.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. All right, great. So, that's our thoughts on what the role of the DM is and what we love about DMing. If you have different thoughts or something we didn't come up with or some aspect of being a DM that you love and want to talk about, please post in our comments. Let us know. And hopefully we'll have future discussions about this because I do feel like Dan said, we've only just scratched the surface.
Yep. Yeah, and possibly things like how do you get started? What would our advice be to new DMs?
Maybe certainly
another topic. Give us ideas about that.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's certainly got to go on the list of future shows.
Good idea. And as always, remember that you can now follow us on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch, and also our website and also our Patreon under the handle Wandering DMs on all of those places. We are live every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, so do please come back in 1 week and join us for another thought-provoking discussion on Wandering DMs. We'll talk to you next time.
We'll see you then.